All right, episode 20. So I am still on track to get one out every month. We'll see how that holds up. Fingers crossed. I'm recording this on the night before I leave for Lone Star Roundup, so I'm pretty excited about that. I'm sure I'll record an episode of that when I get back, if I don't even like record some stuff while I'm there. So that'll be cool. But I was looking at some sections that I had already recorded, and some other news was like happening, and so I wanted to make sure I get a podcast out before I leave. So episode 20, hope you guys enjoy it. And unfortunately, there is more Tesla bullshit. I just can't get away from it. But anyway, hope you guys enjoy. So I think this is going to fall into unrelated, but I guess we'll find out. I don't know how confident I am in this one. So here in the States, if you've been listening to news, and I think it only came onto my radar because I am kind of trying to plan out my year and see what shows I can or can't do with. Of course, my main focus right now is, especially with it coming up so quickly, trying to see if I'm going to be able to make Lone Star Roundup. It's real hit or miss right now, but I just happened to notice that United Airlines has been having a bunch of accidents. And so I was like, I saw some news report and I was like, wow, I think that's three in the last week, like three airplanes with major issues. And so I just, you know, I was like, I looked it up and it was five. And I was like, holy shit, five planes with major failures within a week. Like, what's going on? So one of them, and they get real cagey, unfortunately, in some of these articles when I was reading them to try and figure out what was going on with what. But and I don't know what order these occurred in, because of the way the articles I found were written, it kind of jumped around. But they had, and of course, you know, passengers had footage of one engine like shooting flames out of the, you know, as it was in flight. And it was blamed on bubble wrap, which I am super confused by, because the plane in the video that you see is I don't know if it's at full cruising altitude, but it's up there. Like, this wasn't on takeoff, and the engine is just really like big bursts of flame. And the two or three articles that I found in regards to that incident, people were saying that it wasn't like two or three and then it was done, you know, like it was continuous, and that was blamed on bubble wrap. And I was like, so where the fuck did the bubble wrap come from? Like, was this like a Chinese spy balloon made out of bubble wrap that this thing sucked up? Or, you know, are there somehow like refrigerator sized bubble wrap pods like floating in the air along with the clouds? Like, this doesn't make sense to me how they were able to take off. And if there was bubble wrap that they ingested on the ground, like, how much bubble wrap did they ingest that it was able to affect the engine, you know, that for that amount of time? So that one was weird to me. I don't know if I buy that. Especially if you go on and if you go online and look at how they test these engines to take full bird strikes, you know, into the blades. Like, I understand, you know, like bubble wrap is going to, you know, it's going to get gummy and gross and like stick to stuff. But I don't know, man. I don't know if I buy that one. Another one lost a tire on takeoff, and it fell into the parking lot at the airport, damaging a bunch of vehicles. That plane, you know, all these planes have been able to land safely, which is great. But then another plane had hydraulic failure, and there were some reports that, I don't know if it was the pilot or one of the stewardesses were saying that the pilot had lost control for several minutes before some subsystem was able to kick in and bring it back. But they were able to land that plane safely as well. another skidded off a runway into the grass. And like, that one is funny to me a little bit, and it's also scary. And I was, man, I'm really, I want to be sensitive when I say this, because I know some that, you know, people get upset about shit, but there's a lot of controversy right now about, you know, what they're calling the DEI, the diversity and equity hiring practices. And it was one of those. It turns out it was a female pilot, and she took a turn that she was supposed to take at 10, at I guess 10 knots, whatever that is. She took it at 30, and you know, these planes are not built for cornering on the ground, and it went off into a field and just completely fucked the plane. Not a good look. Not a good look. And then there was another flight that had to return to the airport after 14 hours from somewhere in Australia. It was Sydney to San Francisco. They were 14 hours into the flight, and then they had to turn around and go back. So what's going on at United, guys? I mean, there is other shit happening all over the world, but for one airline to have that many failures in a week, I don't know. If I was the FAA, I'd be, you know, pulling up logs and trying to find a correlation of where these planes were serviced and who had hands on them, because that seems awful sketchy. So I don't know. I guess I'm recording this as of March 15th. I don't know if anything else has happened. I'm kind of waking up in the morning and like going over my notes and trying to get some segments recorded for episode 20. So we'll see maybe if that's like the last of it, or, you know, maybe that more has happened. I don't know. So fingers crossed for United. There's definitely something going on over there. Like, I don't want to jump to full tinfoil hat and be like, is this sabotage? But I mean, or is it just, they're not maintaining their shit over there, and those chickens are coming home to roost all at once. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. I'll definitely be keeping an eye on it. On to the next. All right. So these guys have been with me for a while. I don't know if the code is still valid, so I don't want to give out the code, but I still feel good about recommending the company. Big thanks to Zendex Tools for sponsoring us here at The Lowered. A long time ago, they sent me a set of their GoJacks, and at the time, I was living in a regular, you know, two-car garage, three-bedroom, you know, two-bath style, you know, suburban home. And while the garage was, you know, pretty good, normal, or I would say a little bit bigger than normal two-car garage, when you're trying to park, you know, vehicles like I own, and you probably own too, you know, a 41 Buick Super Coupe and my green 66 hardtop in a standard two-car garage, it just wasn't working out, you know, especially since the laundry, you know, washer and dryer were also in the garage. You know, you don't want them, you know, that close when somebody's doing laundry, because then they end up getting leaned on and people start stacking stuff on them if you have people that don't love you. So having the GoJacks just made that way more workable and super easy. You pull the car in, they look like kind of like a fork with the middle tines missing, and they have wheels on each corner. Slide them in on either side of a wheel, and then you step on a lever to like close the tines together, which lifts the car up. And because they have casters on them, you put one under each corner of the car, and you literally can just move the car around like it's a, you know, a shopping cart at a grocery store. So I could pull a car into the middle of the garage, you know, put a GoJack on each corner of the car, get it jacked up, and then all by myself just push that car right, you know, up against the wall. And they're made in America. The build quality on them is incredible. And they have like a little rack that they store on as well.
They even have a wall mount rack now, which I think I probably am going to need to order here pretty soon, which will let me get it up off the floor, which is even better. Now that I have a 3-car garage, I don't have to use them as much, but I've still used them, you know, when I'm trying to do a photo shoot or something, I'm trying to get real artsy, having them on hand to instead of getting in the car and, you know, having to drive it around in circles and move it, being able to just throw GoJacks under it and then kind of just slide it around a little bit to get the light just the way you want it it's an amazing option. And if you have an actual shop, being able to move project cars around that may not be running, I mean, I can't think of a better option. So they're not cheap, but you know, they're made in America. You get what you pay for, and they're absolutely worth the price. I can't recommend them enough. So Zendex Tools GoJax. I'll have to see if my discount thing is still alive. I'll have to reach out to them and figure that out.
So I really was trying not to do it this time, and I just don't know if I'll ever be able to do a podcast without talking about goddamn Tesla. And oddly enough, this started with Hyundai. So I have some buddies that work in the automotive industry, and one of them sent me an article about Hyundai's systems that they're using to manage their electric cars. And I guess this is an operating system that is kind of underpins a lot of their, how do I want to say this? So it's like, it's basically what Hyundai uses in its electric cars, but it wasn't super clear to me if it was in their gas cars as well. Though I wouldn't be surprised. It's built into the entertainment system, and you know, of course, that spiderwebs into your navigation and everything else. But there was a software update that rolled out, like most people, they see an update just like they do on their phone. They do the same thing on their car. They button push, it gets installed, and they didn't know what they were getting. And in Hyundai's case, it was built-in geofencing. And if you're not familiar with what geofencing is, picture a map in your mind and then like draw a circle around your house, and that's a geofence. So if you were to build a geofence go into the Maps application and build a geofence, or you know, outline a geofence on a map, you're basically telling the system that if the vehicle travels outside the parameters of that fence or outside the parameters of that area, that you'll get a notification. And from what I've read, and I've gone through some forums on Hyundai forums, which I never thought I would do, it also gives an option to set valet like parameters, which cut the power to the vehicle and also limits the speed that it's able to go. It's also giving you an option to set alerts if the vehicle is started or moved, and you know, it also gives you an option to set an off switch so you can disable the car, which is basically the groundwork for what I've been talking about this entire time. And I really expected that we'd get this kind of information out of China first, but shockingly, Korea. So the groundwork's laid, guys. And there have been different, there isn't, I saw a couple posts that alluded to it in different Hyundai forums, but when I went back to cite them, they were removed or deleted, or maybe I just wasn't finding them. So I mean, I don't want to sound alarmist on this particular front, but there seemed to be some talk that if you were to report the car stolen, you know, that you could basically call Hyundai, whatever their version of OnStar is, you know, and have the car, get the location of the car and have the car disabled. But there was an underlying notion that if, you know, police wanted to, they could just call Hyundai and have them turn off your car. So groundwork is laid. I called it. A lot of you guys said I was full of shit, that that wasn't something that was going to happen. And here it is. And not only is it exactly what I said it was, it's being sold as a safety feature. If you go on Hyundai forums and you do a search for Blue Link, which is the name of the system that they're using to, you know, push basically to do this within their vehicles, you'll see people on the forums are writing in and like they think it's cool. They're totally buying that this is a safety feature. This is an option that they didn't even know that they wanted, which is exactly how I said they were going to sell this thing. And if there isn't any pushback by Hyundai, there's no question that this shit is going to get rolled out to other vehicles as well. It's easiest for companies to roll it out to electric vehicles, as I discussed before, because no manufacturer in the U.S. is selling an electric vehicle that doesn't have a 3G, 4G, 5G modem installed from the factory, as well as Wi-Fi. So this is an update that they can just push out. You don't even have to be within Wi-Fi range. Cellular is good enough. And of course, there's with the electric cars, there's no mechanical, in most cases, there's very little to no mechanical connection between the pedals or even in some cases the steering wheel to, you know, what makes the vehicle do what the vehicle do. It's all electronic, you know, so just a few lines of code and they can do whatever they want, allow whatever they want, disallow whatever they want. And people don't read terms and conditions. And in some cases, if you don't do the updates, you void the warranty, as I've heard some Tesla owners say. So it's coming. I keep saying it. And I have heard some other people are starting to talk about it too. Consumer Reports has put out a couple of things and has been putting out things in regards to privacy concerns. That leads us to what I was saying about Tesla. So I'm sure you guys, like me, have heard this this going around. I'll go ahead and play the. I've seen it on Instagram. I don't do TikTok, but it's going around the social medias. I've had a ton of you guys send it to me, so I'll just play the audio. Okay, so this is the post, and it's posted by an Instagram profile called Wicked in White. Which is a weird name, but apparently the guy is a lawyer for a law firm called Rom. I'm going to butcher this, and I apologize, Mr. Wicked. Ramcharitar Law Firm, and they don't name the case. They don't name. Well, you know what? I'm just going to play the recording so you guys can hear it.
All my car heads the fuck up. Anybody doing dirt, heads the fuck up. Let me tell you what's going on. This is crazy, guys. NYPD has partnered secretly with guess who? With fucking Tesla and that bitch-ass Elon Musk. Let me explain something, guys. A car that's automated, that's autonomous, has a ton of cameras. You know that, right? On the side mirrors, on the back of the car, on the side of the car. That's how the car remains autonomous and drives autonomously. So what does that mean? Why am I telling you this? Because all of those cameras, we just found out. Through a case in a very good friend of ours, we're not going to mention the name, but thank you very much. We just found out that a Tesla, all the cameras all over the car, even when the car is off, is fully recording everything. On the street, on the side, on the other side, on the back, every single time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even when the car is fucking off. NYPD is now asking Tesla, which is not putting up a fight. Apple, they won't give you shit. Tesla, they're not even giving a subpoena. All they're doing is they're saying, hey, give us the plate number, give us the location. We'll give you everything that fucking car recorded. So why am I telling you this? Word the fuck up. Don't do dirt around a fucking Tesla. Fuck you, Elon. I got.
All right. So that is apparently the guy's a lawyer and he works at this law firm. I don't know what his status is, but this, I guess this has been out for some time because When I tried to do research on it to see if it was bullshit, you know, see if anybody else had posted about it, oddly enough, I found an article from High Times, you know, a very reputable law enforcement magazine, as I'm all sure you're aware, and an author named Benjamin Adams in April 17th wrote an article, "Is Your Tesla Self-Driving Car Narking You Out?" And I would recommend taking a look at the article. I thought it was really nicely written. I don't personally read High Times that often. I'm not a big law enforcement aficionado. But it was a really well-written article. And basically, they say, reiterate what you hear in the video, in that they don't know what the case is about. They don't know what's being argued. It's not been disclosed yet, but that apparently the law firm, you know, was, the lawyer was saying, yes, this is what we found out, that this is something that Tesla is doing, and that they didn't require a subpoena, and they were just handing over videos that came from the Tesla's Sentry Mode feature, and that the Sentry Mode is not only all the cameras that are on the exterior of the car, but on the interior of the car. And what really got me about reading the article, spoiler alert, if you do decide to read this article, was that they go and found other cases that were happened, it looks like in 2019 and 2022, a Reuters reporter was interviewing Tesla employees, and they were saying that groups of Tesla employees were privately sharing videos of that, you know, from the, basically these employees at Tesla could access anybody that owned a Tesla. They could just punch in the plate, or, you know, the owner, and they could access these videos. And these videos were being maintained on servers. They don't say how long Tesla's maintaining these videos, or the, you know, for each I can't imagine how much room that must be taking up on their servers. But apparently Tesla employees were, you know, accessing these videos, like watching people drive their cars. They were using the videos to see what was in people's garages. And they were sharing the more interesting videos within their chats and with their friends. And I mean, you can imagine with like the kind of people that buy Teslas, and, you know, how it's really been a vehicle that's been adopted by famous folks, can only really imagine what kind of videos they must have been sharing. I'm sure it was some pretty interesting stuff. But yeah, I just can't seem to do a goddamn podcast without talking about Tesla. It's really shocking to me that, especially with Elon's current stance on free speech, where he seems to be really concerned about constitutional values and protecting them, that he would allow something like this, especially when there's precedent where Apple is not. But yeah, so that's what's going on. Crazy. Moving on. All right. So I've gotten some pretty interesting reactions from my Cybertruck post lately. I don't know if you guys, if you follow me on my Facebook, you would have seen my posts from coming back from LA. I got some pictures of Cybertrucks on car haulers being, you know, delivered to dealerships or customers, however Tesla works that. Got to see a cool Cybertruck, I guess owned by a big time Tesla tuner who was towing a race car with his Cybertruck, and it was a race Tesla, so that was kind of cool. I have seen quite a few Cybertrucks driving around town, but I still haven't seen one in person other than, you know, what was at the Peterson, or has been at the Peterson, but I haven't seen like one that's owned by an actual person yet in town, like up close where I can walk around it and really kind of look and see what the quality of the build looks like. I'm really interested mostly to see how they're holding up. Here in California, it's pretty normal if you don't have a house built in the 70s or, you know, before. Garages are not getting bigger here in Cali. In fact, they seem to be getting tighter and tighter every, you know, passing year. So it'll be interesting to see, especially since a lot of these Tesla guys, you know, it's like one of those purchases that folks are making as a it's more like a fashion statement. You know, like, these aren't like people that own farms or own, you know, normally large properties. You know, they live in cities, and they parking is sketchy sometimes. And so it'll be really interesting to see how these vehicles pulled up. There's a lot of talk of, oh, it's so easy, you could just wrap it. But what I don't seem to be hearing, or you know, when people talk about wrapping it, is that's only going to, well, one, how is the glue and the wrap going to affect the stainless steel? Because it's, you know, there is a chemical agent there, and it's not, you know, wrap is normally meant to go over paint or primer. This is going to be bare metal. Another thing is that I don't hear people addressing is, you know, like, wrapping isn't painting. You know, if you paint a vehicle, you paint a part, you paint a body panel, right, it's getting painted, or coverage at least, on both sides. They, you know, a lot of times, you know, painters will, you know, they'll paint the exterior part, the part that you see, you know, but the backside of the panel isn't left bare metal. You know, it's shot with an etching primer. Generally, it's shot with some kind of protection. And that's where I think people aren't really, you know, taking the Cybertruck being bare metal to that next logical step. You know, if you're protecting the outside, just the, you know, outside fascia of the part that is seen when the doors are closed, when you open the door, you know, the door jams, how much of the door jams are exposed metal? And if, you know, if you only do the wrap and cut it into the door jamb, and where it wraps around that one edge, like, everything inside there, not only is it still going to be exposed, but it's also like, it's a place where moisture is trapped. You know, there's a gasket there, there's a seal, water, condensation, all that debris. You know, when you open your door and you look in the jamb, if you're not, you know, kind of, I guess, anally retentive in that way, like me, I'm always, you know, wiping down my jams every time I wash the vehicle, getting them clean as well. But I don't see Tesla owners doing that, at least not most. So I don't think, you know, a run-of-the-mill wrap is going to, you know, solve that particular problem. And it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I made a prediction that I don't think these, while they are right now selling above what they sold for list, and I've had plenty of people point out that there's, you know, caveats in the contract that prevents you from doing that, or that you're supposed to sell it back to Tesla, or you could, you know, be imposed upon with some kind of fee if you sell it privately. I don't know how that's going to shake out. I know other car companies have done similar things, but it'll be really interesting to me how, especially with the majority of the United States, we're kind of in the weird wintry time, and, you know, weather changing, and it's very unpredictable as to what we're going to get season to season in a lot of places in the U.S. now. But right now it's snow, you know, from the Rockies east. A lot of the U.S. is getting more snow than they have in quite some time. It's cold, it's nasty, and it's raining all over the West Coast, you know, where we're not getting snow. So these Cybertrucks are being delivered, you know, during poor weather season. And as I stated before, I'm betting a lot of them are going to be parked outside. So I think this will be like an immediate test of, you know, not only how that truck is going to hold up finish wise, but how the buyers are going to hold up when they walk out and they see their shiny new, not so shiny. So anyway, that's the Cybertruck. I've gotten a lot of positive and negative comments on my hypothesis that I think that they will be going down in price very quickly. But I'm not always right. So we'll see how that shakes out. Cybertrucks rusting in a neighborhood near you. Coming soon, I guess. We'll see. All right, on to the next. All right. So I thought this was really nice. So I put the question to you guys, and I don't think you guys understood the assignment, but I'll get to that. I was tagged in a post on Instagram by Chris Magino, and I'm saying the last name wrong, so I apologize in advance, Chris. But I was really stoked that you tagged me in this post, and it was a post originally from a group I wasn't following, but I think I am now. Street_coverage_original. It's another Instagram account that's automotive oriented. And it was in regards to automotive gifts that, you know, that you could get somebody that they would certainly or more than likely appreciate. And I did. I thought it was a great list. It's only five. So I'm going to go over what was on the actual list from Street Coverage Original. And then I'm going to go over like some of the stuff you guys said. So here's the official list. Number one on the list was wheel cleaner, which I couldn't agree with more. I don't have white walls on all of my vehicles, but I do have vehicles with white walls. And, you know, I don't have like custom rims on everything, but, you know, some of my vehicles do. So brake dust is terrible, and road grime, especially if you're in a state like California where I'm at, road construction is never ending, and somehow we have never-ending road construction and our roads continue to somehow be shitty all the time. So I don't know how they cast that particular spell, but it's certainly hard on wheels. And the guys over at Street Coverage Original, they recommended Chemical Guys Diablo Wheel Cleaner for wire wheels specifically. I don't have experience with the Chemical Guys or with Diablo Wheel Cleaner, so I can't give a... I'm not recommending it myself. But I'm sure it's good stuff. And I guess the... And I have certainly seen, you know, guys with Chemical Guys stuff at shows. So I have seen guys using it. I just haven't yet. So I don't want to say that I'm recommending it, you know. Just to be clear, not that I think it's bad stuff. I just don't have any experience. But I guess the Chemical Guys, they also have a line of brushes that are really good for cleaning, you know, wire wheels specifically, which I don't have wire wheels yet. If you guys see my latest posts, I'm searching for a set of original Krager Star Wires for the Hardtop Galaxy. But I've had wire wheels in the past, and they really suck to clean. So getting wheel cleaner or, you know, brushes to do that job specifically would be nice. I thought that was a really cool gift idea, and it wouldn't be that expensive. And I think that's what I like most about this list is that most of these are not spendy. You know, it's something that, you know, your kids could get you for your birthday or something. So the number two was bleach white wall cleaner. And I go through that stuff like crazy, so I would be really stoked if somebody just showed up with a gallon of it, you know, like, hey, happy birthday or Merry Christmas, it's a gallon of bleach white, you know, cleaner. Hell yeah, super down. And not that expensive. The next and probably my favorite on the list, number three, was microfiber towels. I am, hell yeah. Freshy microfiber towels, like a huge bag of them, and like super bonus points if they're green, because I'm a nerd like that, and all my cars of course are green, so makes me happy for some reason. But yeah, I go through microfiber towels like crazy. I'm always buying a bag where, you know, whenever I go into an auto parts store or if I see them on sale somewhere, and they're not that expensive, you know, and I know how happy that would make me, so I'm sure it would make other folks happy too. And if you coupled that with, you know, so, like wheel cleaner or, you know, a detailer or something. And, you know, if you're not sure what your buddy uses, ask, you know, or if you're a wife or a girlfriend and you're listening to this, take a peek in the garage, you know, or look in the trunk of the car when, you know, when you get the opportunity and kind of make a mental note, you know, because the guys have preferences for their most guys are pretty loyal to their preferences when it comes to specific cleaners. So getting a gift like that would be pretty dope. I thought that was a great one. The next one, at first I was a little bit like, number four was a gas card. And, you know, somebody that drives to shows as much as I do, if I got a gas card, I'd be stoked. You know, I have to admit, at first I was a little weird about it. I don't know why. Gift cards are, I don't know. I always feel like it's the gift that you get somebody when you're not really wanting to think about what gift you want to get them. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like if you get, somebody gets me a gift card, they're like, you know, I don't really give a shit. Like get what you want. I don't know. I guess that's why like holidays and stuff are so hard on me. Cause I want to, you know, if I'm giving somebody a gift, I want to put some thought into it. But again, gas is expensive. I just tanked up Sonoma Air. She only took 14 gallons, which, you know, was pretty much a whole tank for that truck. And it was right on top of $100. So, you know, gas card, not a bad idea and thoughtful, you know, so that would be cool. And then number five on their list was the most expensive. Although it's been a while since I bought one. I did a quick look on Amazon and you could get them for relatively reasonable, like under $100. Was a jump box, and I keep one in Truckee Verde. I have one in the wife's car. I generally have another one that I was moving around from car. I'm not sure what car it's in right now. I should really check. But having a jump box is always a good idea, even if, you know, you never know when something's going to happen. Like you leave your lights on, or like maybe you plug an accessory in to a circuit that doesn't auto turn off if you have an older cars like I do. Or if you're just at a show, you know, like somebody needs a hand, you know, having that jump box is a really nice tool to have in a car. And it's something that you can charge up and put in there and not worry about. You know, you should check it, obviously, but I thought that was a good idea. So I put that question, I posted it on my Facebook and Instagram, and I put that question to you guys. And I don't think you guys understood the assignment. At least some of you. Robert Bosch posted, and I apologize if I'm messing up your names, Hot Wheels. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like I like Hot Wheels. I bought, I don't know how many, man, the money I would have if I had all the money I spent on Hot Wheels back. You know, especially if it's a car that's cool. You know, like my daughter brought me home Hot Wheels just, it was a while back, but it was, I can't remember what the name of the line was, but it was like, it was one of their cartoony, it wasn't like a real car, it was like a taco, you know, and it had like, I don't know, like a taco theme name, and I don't know, like it was a nice gesture, and it was, so Hot Wheels I thought was a good one. Thor Johnson, he said one of his favorite automotive-oriented gifts was an AFX slot car that he got on Christmas as a kid, and that's super cool. But I mean, that you'd have to go looking for something like that. So that would be a cool gift, especially if your significant other or buddy knew that that was something that you were into. You know, finding a specific model would be. I don't know. I thought that was a good one. There was another one that I kind of liked was from Andre Guy Michel. I'm really terrible with some of these names. I'm sure. And he got a personalized he says Rego plate, but I'm guessing that's a license plate from his parents. And like, hopefully it was a good one. Like, he didn't say what the plate was. So, but he said it was the best present ever. So I guess he liked it. That's a hard one for me to recommend. Like, you'd really have to know a guy to get a license plate, a personalized license plate that he's going to have on their car, you know, the car for forever. But I mean, it worked out for him. Jennifer Arrington said she got a new set of tires for a 79 Datsun for her 18th birthday that she was really stoked on. That's a pretty spendy gift, but hell yeah. You know, like, I don't know that it would really bum me out if a buddy looked at my car and was like, oh, I'm buying you some tires. Like, ugh, that would not be a good feeling. But, you know, if it was like your parents, you know, or, you know, something like that, if you're young enough to where your parents are still, you know, helping you out in that way, that's pretty rad. You know, or if you're, you know, you notice you're, if you're dating a girl and you notice her tires aren't great and she doesn't have, you know, family or, you know, people to help her out at the time, like that's, you know, showing them that you care, that you want them to be safe. So I thought that was a pretty good one too. Although definitely on the spendy side. And Ryan Welch said on his 21st birthday, he came home and his parents had gone to a custom shop and had all new clear corner, tail, and marker lights with bulbs ready for him for his birthday for a Honda Accord that he had. And that's sick. I really like that one. You know, it's always nice when you feel like somebody's paying attention to you. And, you know, especially when you're young and you're starting out, like, I just ordered a new set of tails for, kind of letting the cat out of the bag on this, but I just ordered a new set of tails for Truckee Verde and they were like $300. And that's not cheap. And, you know, shit is so, especially right now with inflation being so bad here in the States, like if that was something that everybody knew you were after and, you know, it was like, they were able to get the exact ones that you wanted. Like that's pretty cool. I really like that one. So yeah, I thought that was a really nice list, you know, and this, especially because the majority of it was, you know, stuff that is affordable even now. So, I don't know if there's something that you didn't hear or something that you got or something that you like, on the list, yeah, let me know. Maybe I'll keep this list going and then I'll repost something like it closer to the holidays and help people out. On to the next.
All right, you guys know it took me a long time to find the right bed cover for Truckee Verde. Shaving the tailgate had the look I wanted, but it also made it next to impossible to find a bed cover because all the bed covers I could find required dropping the tailgate first. Obviously, tailgate shaved, you can't do that. Also wanted to make sure I found a cover that didn't block my view out of the rear window when I had it open. And Paragon covered both of those things. I definitely recommend checking them out. Their product is made in the United States. It's aluminum panels, so you don't have to worry about some material going bad or getting sun-checked or bleached. And when you fold it up, it goes up against the cab, but it's inside the bed, so it doesn't block your view out the back window. And it's made in the United States, so you can't beat that. And if you go to their website at peragon.com and you pick out your bed cover and you put in the code THELOWERED15, that's the lowered 15, you get 15% off. So yeah, check them out. They're badass. Big thanks to Paragon. We definitely love the cover on Truckee Verde.
So I had a few requests to tell this story, and I can't remember if I posted it or I know, I'm sure I posted it before, but I don't know that I've told it on the podcast. And so I was at Ultra Truck Works checking on the Galaxy. It's still there, getting ready, getting the Hotchkiss TVS system installed for the summer. And from there, it'll go to TBR. But while I was there and we're checking it out, a couple other customers wandered in and, you know, we started talking about the car. And inevitably with that particular car, people always ask me about the paint, which I'm really proud of. It's a little long in the tooth. It's ready to be repainted now. But in pictures, if you go back and look at my post of my Galaxy hardtop, you'll notice that it changes color quite a bit. And it's not like a chameleon color. It's a very specific color from a one-year-only manufacturer. It was only a one-year-only color as far as I know. I won't say what manufacturer. No, I will not name the color. I've been asked a bunch of times, and I'm just not giving that one up. But if I ever do get it repainted, of course, I will have it repainted the same color. It's kind of a thing, and I can't imagine that car any other color at this point. But when I was getting that car prepped for paint, so I bought the car from the original owner's son. I know I've told that story before. And I had blown the 289 out of it. It was originally a 289 Cruise-O-Matic car. It's a radio delete car. Like, literally, the only options the car has are the 289 and that it's the fastback, you know, or the Galaxy roof line instead of being the custom roof line. Like, it's legit like a straight six and a roof line away from being a custom. It has no options, which is kind of what I now love about it. Initially, it's why I didn't want the car, and despite my dad talking me into it. But anyway, so I had blown the 289 out of it, doing dumb shit, and which, I mean, I could tell that story later if you guys want to hear it, but I had scraped up every dollar I could and worked a ton of overtime, and this guy named Todd, initially his parents, and then he inherited a local automotive shop, and he built like hot rods and did project cars on the side, and he helped me build a 351 Windsor motor for it after my dad cock blocked me on a bunch of big block purchases. Ultimately, we happened to be at a junkyard, and this guy had just towed in a 69 Ford Country Squire with the 351 Windsor in it, and it was the four barrel, you know, performance whatever version, and it had been T-boned, but it ran. You know, we heard it run. The guy was able to drive it around. Motor was fine. It had relatively low miles, although I don't remember what it had. And then, of course, I couldn't leave that shit alone. So I took it over to Todd's, who blew it apart, and we did the Edelbrock RPM kit on it, minus the heads. I couldn't afford the heads at the time. And I had got the motor installed. We got it tuned and dialed and running really great. And I had driven it to work, which I didn't normally do. I had a couple cars even then. This is back in my early 20s. And as I was driving it, home to get changed from work. And then I was going to meet a bunch of buddies at our local track, Sacramento Raceway, just to see what it run. The car's never been about racing. I never, not for one second, ever thought about this car as a quarter mile car. That's just not what this car is for. But, you know, you put a new motor in it, it's curious. So on my way home, I was driving down this like regular, pretty wide, you know, four lane road, and it was all by myself. And as I was coming up, it's so funny, like I even today, like some like 20 something years later, I still remember the feeling of like, this motherfucker's gonna do something not cool. And this brand new Honda was like pulled over on the side next to this apartment complex. And it just so happened there was a couple of moms from the apartment complex with their kids having a picnic on this like little thing of grass that was like goes down the side of the road between their road and the apartment complex. and they were kind of close to where this car was parked. And as I got close to the car, he just went to make a U-turn like directly in front of me. And I went wide thinking he would see me. I should have gone inside, but there was, you know, families on the grass. There was, I couldn't do that. I ended up almost getting around him, and he hit me right behind the passenger side rear axle, and my bumper hooked the front of his car and tore the front end off of his car. And so the car was wrecked, and I was heartbroken. I was just sitting in my car, was so furious. Like one of the moms said that I had my hands on either side of the steering wheel, and that she could see that the steering wheel was flexing in my grip. Like I was so angry. I didn't dare get out of the car. I just knew I was going to murder that guy. And she was just sweet as could be. And she stayed with me until a cop showed up, and thank God she did. Because when the cops did finally show up, the whole time the guy was apologizing to me. I'm a big dude. If we ever meet in person, like, I mean, I'm 6'6". Like, it's a thing. And this was like this a little Asian dude, and I was just towering over him. And I was seeing red. I was fit to murder this guy. But he was super apologetic, and that calmed me down. And then Highway Patrol showed up, and I have to say, California Highway Patrol, I don't know, I mean, everybody's got their own experiences, but for some reason, California Highway Patrol has always been amazing to me. No matter how in the wrong or dumb the shit I was doing was, I've never had anything but amazing experiences with California Highway Patrol, and this was no different. He walks up to me and he says, okay, I already talked to him, and he says it wasn't his fault. And apparently, like, my entire demeanor, like, went to, like, battle mode, because the cop, like, immediately put his hand on my chest and was like, whoa, like, hey, I talked to the witnesses, though, and everybody said it wasn't your fault. I don't know if he was just gonna, like, fucking with me a little bit there at the beginning. But, like, he was super cool after that, and the moms that were there with their kids, like, everybody, they all had stayed and, like, brought me drinks and stuff. They were just amazing. It was as good as an experience as a terrible, terrible accident could be. I'll never forget that. Oh, my God. But his insurance paid a little bit, and I got super lucky, and it was... I found a small family body shop, which unfortunately is no longer around. The old man, Bill Mitchell, was Mitchell's Auto Body in Elk Grove, California. Bill passed away, and his daughter kind of closed up the shop. So, but they were fantastic. Not only did they, you know, they want to do the work, but they allowed me to do as much of the work as I could under their supervision, and to kind of maximize my dollar. So basically they got me as big a check as they could get me. And then Bill kind of, and Tawny kind of opened up a file for me, and they were like, okay, like, this is what it's going to cost. And the more you do, like, the more we can put towards, you know, the final paint. So my girlfriend and I stripped all the interior out of it ourselves, and then got to sanding, and I took the entire car down to bare metal. And I mean, it was a one owner car, so I mean, the car was just cherry, like, it was pristine. I got it with just a little bit over 60,000 miles on it from the original owner, and so I mean, it was, and it spent 15 years before I picked it up in this garage sealed up. And it was just, I was so heartbroken that it had been damaged under my watch. But because I had another Galaxy, I had been collecting parts anyway. And so I had the Galaxy script for it already. I was able to get the pieces that I need. And because it was such a low level model and of where it got hit, it didn't need any, there wasn't like hard to find chrome bits other than that script, which again, I already had. So I, you know, stripped the car down to bare metal. And then that's kind of when things, you know, the wheels started turning. My dad was really pushing for me to paint the car black. It was originally an ivy gold green car. And I just couldn't do that. I just didn't want it. I didn't want a black car. I've having experience with, you know, my dad owning black cars in the past. I didn't want to do that maintenance. And I really had kind of grown to love the green. And around this time, when the highway patrolman, he would come through the auto body shop every once in a while. And at the time, in California, there was a lot of talk about there being a requirement for a third brake light that would, you know, the one that goes in, it used to go in the back window and now they mount it everywhere on the body. But at the time, that was a new thing. And if you go back to magazines of the time, they show like these really terrible, like they almost look like plumbing, like billet third brake lights that guys were installing, you know, to fit in with whatever this requirement, although it never went into effect as far as I know. I happened to be at a mini truck shop, and while the car was still in bare metal, I happened to be at a mini truck show, I should say, and this guy pulled in, I believe it was a Nissan hardbody, and it had no taillights, and the whole bed was perfectly smooth. And then as he went past me, he hit the brakes, and the taillights shined through the paint. And I chased the guy down, and I begged him to explain to me how he had done what he'd done. And then I went immediately to our, you know, bookstore and bought every like mini truck magazine I could find, and found ads for this like this brake light kit that allowed you to put a LED behind the paint. And so we put the sun. Mark Mitchell had come back to the shop during this time, and he was kind of an old, like he was an older guy, but he was not too much older, but he was into mini trucks and like hot rods and customs and stuff. And he'd built a bunch of personal projects, you know, his dad owning a body shop. He had some cool rides. And so he was just super cool. And we kind of started looking at the car and like trying to decide what modifications we wanted to I wanted to do to the car, and that was one of them. So a lot of people don't know that I have a dual row 13 inch LED third brake light in between the top of the trunk lid and the bottom of the back window. Like it's, if you don't know it's there, you can't see it. And normally when like guys do see it, they lose their shit. Even now, it's not a common mod. So I'm really proud of that one. We also ended up shaving the door locks and the trunk lock because they kind of, in my mind, interrupted the flow of the car. And I kept the hood ornament. Mark really pushed for me to get rid of the hood ornament. And I had always planned to do a custom hood ornament for it, which I've just never gotten around to. Maybe I will. And then it used to say Ford in big block, you know, letters across the hood, on the forehead of the hood, basically the part above the chrome. So there's the grill, and then there's a piece of chrome on the bottom of the hood lip. And then there's the flat part, on the front of the hood. And it used to say Ford in big block letters. And Mark and I shaved that. He showed me how to kind of dent it in a little bit and then just kind of weld up the holes and then, you know, grind it down and then smooth it out. So that took months, and they were super kind, and they let me take up space in their shop. And as we kept getting closer and closer to paint, you know, they shoot primer and I'd block it, and they'd shoot primer or like we'd fill little spots and I'd block it. And after they got the quarter panel dialed in, and I couldn't make up my mind. And I still have the trunk lid. I went to a yard in Turlock, which is a few hours away, to get a couple pieces of chrome that I needed, and the guy really screwed me, or tried to screw me, and so I ended up bringing half of a trunk lid home. That's another story. And I ended up, I still have it to this day, but we painted, like taped it off and painted all these different shades of green, and I just could not make up my mind what shade of green I wanted to paint this car. And I can't remember where I saw the article, but basically this guy took took a side view picture of his car and put it in Photoshop, made it black and white, and then printed it on card, you know, kind of adjusted the colors until you could just see like the outline of the car itself, like it almost looked like a pencil drawing, and then printed it out on cardstock and took an X-Acto knife and cut out like the hot points of the car, like where the shine would be, kind of like basically made a stencil of his car. And then he went to car dealerships and put it on, you know, different paint jobs so you could see the paint job through the cardstock on the outline of your car, which is it's friggin' genius. And I wish I still had that piece of paper. I don't have any idea. I guess I can make another one. I don't have any idea where it went, but anyway, so I drove out by myself to the Roseville Auto Mall, which is still there. It's a big auto mall here in the Sacramento area. And I started off on one side, and I get out of my car, not the Galaxy, another car I was driving daily at the time, a little Pontiac Grand Prix, I believe. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe, anyway. So I start walking up to cars, and I'm putting this piece of paper down, like, on the hood, you know, or over the hood of these cars, and kind of looking at it, and, you know, making faces, I'm sure, and then kind of walking to the next car. And there's, you know, car dealership. So there's all these sales guys, you know, that are up by the building, and the manager comes stomping out and he goes, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, this." And I show him and he goes, "Nah, that's not the right color." And then he just like walked with me through the dealership, like watching me do this, and like nothing in the dealership was right. And so he's like, "Well, wait a minute. And he goes and gets a golf cart. And a couple of the other sales guys had joined us by this time, and we went to the next dealership. And so, you know, same story, except for, you know, these sales guys see us, you know, obvious sales guys from another car lot, pull up on a golf cart into their lot, you know, so obviously they're like, "What the hell's going on?" And they see us walking over to their cars, and I'm putting this piece of paper, and we're all making faces, and yeah, no, you know, that kind of shit. And so their sales manager comes out and he's like, "What the fuck are you guys doing?" And the sales manager that was already with me was like, "Oh, show him. And so I do. And he's like, "Oh, that doesn't look right." And so to make a long story short, I made the entire loop around this dealership doing that, picking up golf carts full of sales managers and finance managers and sales guys. And by the end of the trip, I had like, I don't know how many golf carts, a train of them behind me, and this lead golf cart. And we got to this last dealership, and I won't say which one it was. I put the card down on this car, and everybody was like, "Oh, shit, that's the one. Holy shit, that's perfect. Yeah, you got to do that. And so the whole crowd of us went in to the into the dealership with the VIN number, and we got the paint code number and the name of the paint and all that shit. And the guys at the dealership were like, "What is happening?" And so we had to take them out to the car and put the card down. And they're like, "Oh my God, that's going to look so good." And so that's how I picked the paint color for my 66 Galaxy hardtop. And then of course, once it was painted, I brought it back to the dealerships so the guys could see it. Which was really cool. Most of the sales guys didn't even work there anymore, but a couple of the sales managers still did, and they were really stoked to see it. And at the time, I didn't even have the Supremes on it. I had just gotten it out of paint and had it, you know, final sanding, final clear coat, all dialed in, and then my girlfriend and I put the interior back in it, and I had to custom order the Supremes because back then nobody made Supremes. You couldn't just, you know, call up Krager or any one of the dozen other people that are making Supremes again. I actually had to have, I called everywhere that I could think of, and I finally got directed to Stockton Wire Wheel, which actually had a pretty big beef going on with the ham at the time. So I was kind of leery of doing business there. But I drove down to Stockton and I talked with the guys, and they had six centers for the Supremes in their old stock. And they were able to custom make me standard offset 15-inch Supremes, which is exactly what I wanted. I didn't want a smaller wheel because I do drive distance, and you know, I didn't want to screw around with the gearing in the car. I wanted to keep that part dialed. So anyway, that's the story of how I got the paint color for the Galaxy. I love that car so much. So many stupid things and stories and shit around that car. But anyway, hope you guys like the story. So, do you ever kind of have a realization that you might be kind of a dick? I guess if you follow me at all, you know, I don't know. I'm sure you have your own opinion. And whatever it is, I don't need to hear it. But I was hanging out with a group of guys. And if you haven't been, like, if you don't know about this, like, all more power to you because it's dumb. But apparently, a couple times recently, the lottery has gotten to, like, astronomical heights. And, of course, you know, you drive down the freeways in California, you see these big billboards for the lottery, and it shows, you know, how much the lottery is up to. And, you know, who doesn't, like, start thinking of what they would do, you know? So I just happened to be in a circle of guys, and everybody was doing, one of the guys had brought up, you know, the lottery. It was like, I think it was over $1 billion, which is crazy. Sadly, I did buy a ticket. Of course, I did not win. But anyway, you know, he was talking about, like, what he would do if he won, like, what cars he would buy, you know, typical, like, walking around cars and coffee kind of talk, especially up here, you know, when you're walking around so much high-end machinery. You know, it's real common up here. I don't post them too much because you guys don't give a shit, but you know, it's, you're just as likely to come across a Chevelle as you are a McLaren up here. They're pretty common. But anyway, so, you know, it kind of goes down the row of guys and everybody's saying their piece of what they would do. And then, you know, kind of gets to be my turn. And I was just had one of those moments. And I said that I would just go around buying 66 Galaxy two-door hardtops, and I would build them in different genres, but paint them all the same as my hardtop, and just tell people that I only had one car and I just like to switch it up. But like do it in a way it was completely obvious that couldn't possibly be the truth. Like build one like full-on, like lifted, almost street freak, like Gasser style. Build, you know, send another one down to Kibitech and have him do a full, you know, desert pre-runner chassis, you know, with all the gold suspension that he likes doing, which looks so friggin' cool. But do like a full pre-runner style Galaxy with the, you know, big off-road tires and shit. Reach out to like Ready to Rock, Von Gittin, and have him do like a Ken Block style, you know, Hoonicorn version of the Galaxy, but, you know, paint them all the same color. And like, even on the off-road version, like somehow figure out a way to do like an off-road version of the Supremes. I know it's stupid. I just thought it would be hilarious to have a garage full of 66 Galaxies, like built to every genre. And every time I show up at Cars and Coffee, I'd be like, no, it's the same car. I get bored. I switch it up, you know, so it looks different for the next show. Oh, man. I don't know. It was one of those on-the-fly stupid things. I thought it was funny anyway. Thought you guys would get a kick out of it. So that, moving on. All right, so I feel kind of bad about episode 20. I'm kind of in a rush to get this thing out. I really wanted to get it out before I leave for Lone Star, so hope you guys enjoyed it. And do all the things. If you're on my Facebook already, check out my Instagram, TheLordHMFIC. Check out my website. I post longer format, kind of like blog style posts there. And I'm sure I'll be recording another episode when I get back from Lone Star. I've got tons of stuff lined up, so I'm going to try and hit every single event, like every single thing that I can while I'm there. I'm going to do the shop crawl as well, so I'm really stoked on that. It's going to be a good time, so fingers crossed. I look forward to telling you guys all about it when I get back. Hope you guys are doing well, and have a good one.